in the reading from 2 Corinthians 10, 1 to 6, which we had, you come across this expression, our war and our weapons are not of this world. There's a danger in that. It could sound otherworldly, but they are applied and active in our world, like the power from the sun, which crosses 93 million miles of space silently, quietly, unannounced, and does all sorts of incredible things here on the earth. Now, last Sunday morning, Graham was speaking about the challenge of addressing spiritual powers ranged against God. And it was a serious, fearsome business, the power of the evil spirits. But this morning, we're thinking of a totally different kind of opposition. Without going into the background, I could bore you to death, having lectured on it for many years, about all the visits of Paul to Corinth and were there any other letters and so on. But it was, he did say at one stage, he gave thanks for all of them, but he was a very gracious Christian because he had a hard time in Corinth. In our reading, in 2 Corinthians 10, we hear about severe tensions. And part of the problem was a group of bumptious so-called apostles who arrived in Corinth. Had got to know Paul briefly, but they immediately started to cause him problems. They had letters of recommendation, and they were very impressive. They were eloquent, and they seemed to be powerful. And they used to swag about the distance they'd have to travel in order to get to Corinth. And some of the Corinthians began to criticize the Apostle Paul, making a comparison against these swanky, bumptious, gifted visitors and the Apostle Paul. We might like to think Paul was a fantastic preacher. He wasn't. He was considered to be not a very good public speaker. His letters were powerful, clear, cogent, persuasive, but his physical presence was nothing like that. There was a marked contrast between the way he worked amongst the Corinthians and the way these so-called new apostles worked. First, there was his appearance and his demeanour. It said that he was a short man. I feel encouraged by that. But he had a bald head. I'm relieved I don't, to be honest. He had bandy legs. And these are classic descriptions which come from ancient literature, talking about Paul. He was short and stocky, and even revealed that he had a quite considerable nose on him. It's also claimed, as I said, that he wasn't a good speaker. And Paul confirms that in his first letter to the Corinthians, when he wrote, "For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with words of human wisdom," he said, "with no great eloquence or following the rules of ancient rhetoric, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power." In Acts 20, we hear a time when he was preaching. Now, I don't want you to do this morning. You'll not get your lunch if you do. But he was preaching in an evening, and it probably was quite a hot and tiresome day. And Paul had a habit of going a bit on and on. I promise I won't do that this morning. But he preached for about 4 hours, and he wasn't the best speaker in the world. And people were getting pretty tired. And a young man who was called Eutychus was sat on a windowsill on the third floor in his house. And he just eventually dozed off, and he fell off the window sill to the ground, and he died. But don't worry, Paul was a gracious man, and he brought him back to life again. Now, I don't think Graham and I have ever had to do that in any of the services we've led. I've seen quite a few people doze off. You know about the preacher who dreamt he was preaching. And then he woke up and found out he was. Or the other one that says, Well, on the front row, there was a man sound asleep, and the preacher got pretty irritated and said, "Listen, wake your husband up." And she replied, "Well, you put him to sleep, you wake him up." Now, Sir Paul was not the most gripping of public speakers. Don't ever forget that. The second thing was that they ridiculed Paul's general manner. He was thought to be very timid and unassuming. And timid, unconvincing, is also another way you can translate the words there from the Greek. And there lies the rub. Because they did know another Paul, the Paul who used to write letters. And his letters were not timid, they were not unconvincing, they were not weak, they were powerful and cogent. So there was a dissonance, we say in English, between what he was like as a person and what he was like when he wasn't with them and used to write them letters. These were strongly worded and well written. And this led the false apostles to accuse Paul of being inconsistent and worse, of being worldly. He's not the person he appears to be. One thing when present with them in the flesh, and something totally different when he was absent writing his letters. And in the Corinthian letters in this chapter, Paul is keen to spell this out and to explain it and to defend it, because he was under the weight of criticism and attempts to undermine his work. A bit like Theresa May, you know, when around her seems to be trying to do her down. How would you be a prime minister in those circumstances yourself? And at the very beginning of 2 Corinthians 10, Paul puts his finger on the essence of his demeanour and behaviour as he went about his work. And he speaks about the meekness and the gentleness of Christ. This was the Christ of whom Mark wrote, said in Mark 10:44, "Whoever among you wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." And so from this we learn that Paul sought to serve the gospel in a thoroughly and unashamedly Christ-like way. His model for mission and ministry was the mission and ministry of Christ himself. In our times, the church seeks to recover that truth in the reality of a movement which is called Mission in Christ's Way. In order to reach the world in all its need, we need to serve and preach and worship and witness in a Christ-like way. Indeed, one of those early descriptions which concentrate on physical appearance, there was this concession, and it's the same group of writings that described his physical appearance. They admitted, "But as a human being, he was full of grace, for at times he looked like a man, and at times he had the face of an angel." In other words, the face of someone who truly walks with God. In person, Paul never ever claimed to be anything other than an ordinary person, though he had actually in his life achieved many things. There was nothing in him which couldn't have been seen and heard. Indeed, of himself, Paul would say, "I am nothing. I am a nobody," he would say. But the power he possessed and expressed, particularly through his writings, was to be found in truth, in the gospel itself. It was to be found in his word. In despising his humility and his humanity, the critics revealed that it was they and not Paul who were being truly worldly, and so they themselves lacked the true power of God. Paul could say, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, because it is the power of God." for the salvation of all who will believe in him. And that brings us to the central nub of our subject this morning, and we'll deal with it very briefly. Paul is acutely aware of the sheer strength of the human rebellion against God and of the spiritual powers ranged against God and God's work. And so he likens it to a strongly guarded fortress, like a wall which might appear one day in Latin America between Mexico and another country. Keep them out. And although the false apostles would have believed that the fortress of human reason is very difficult to overcome, they looked at Paul and looked at his methods and thought they were very weak. And they failed to see that the grasp, failed to grasp the truth of the gospel, which is, has this inherent power to demolish strongholds. Paul expressed it like this: we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Every person who is full of the Spirit is equally full of wisdom and understanding. To be spiritual is not to die from here down to there. It's something totally different. In chapter 10 of 2 Corinthians 3 to 4, he spells it out. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not weapons of the world. Just think of Mr. Trump counting up his nuclear missiles and his bombs, and how puny the new missiles and bombs of North Korea seem, and he's about to go and see them and put them right. Think of others in the world, the Iranians perhaps, certainly the Russians, the French, the British. We rest on the strength of weapons quite often. We hope they'll keep us safe, but they are at best partial solutions to the real problems of human beings in the world. Mr. Trump, who speaks of the button on his desk, his nuclear button, being bigger than the one on the desk of the president of North Korea, who he nicknames Rocket Man. The build-up of tensions in various countries of the world as they try and find appropriate ways to defend themselves. The trouble is, it isn't always about defense. Sometimes it is about attack and real dangers to us all. The weapons which Paul uses are so different. They're like the energy coming from the sun that powers that little boat on those rivers in North Latin America, powered from on high. And as we ponder them, let's understand that they are available to every Christian. It's not the precinct and the benefits to an exclusive few who have these powers which are beyond themselves and more powerful than the power available in the world. These powers which are not of this world, these weapons which are not as the world uses, are available to every single believing Christian. That is the point. It's the fact we don't use them that's probably the difficulty we face. And there's a verse in the letter which James wrote, chapter 1, verse 5. He's actually speaking about the wisdom in which various times in that letter he speaks of wisdom which comes from above. It comes down. It's available to us. And he writes this: if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. I think that applies directly to the notion of powers which are not of the world, weapons which are not of the world. But you have to ask them. They are available. There's a simplicity there. If you lack wisdom, if we lack the weapons which are not of this world, what we really need to do is to ask God for them. This particular battle is fought, lost, and won on the ground of prayer. If we're not prayerful, if we're not in communion with God, asking for God's help constantly, we'll lose the battle and will not get the benefit of these weapons. There is sincerity here. I love this bit in James, who says, without finding fault. You know when you come into church, and I'll play the role and my wife will play her role, and I'll say, Elijah, have you seen where my shoes are? And she'll shout up, I've told you before, they're downstairs here in the entrance hall. Okay? Oh, sorry, thank you very much. 20 minutes later, I'm ready to come. I've read through the sermon 10 times. I'm coming down the stairs. And I say, where did you say the shoes were? And a not very patient reply will come. I told you, they're in the entrance hall. Why don't you listen to what I say? And that's how a lively, good life is in certain households. God isn't like that. God never says, it's you again. I've told you. Why do you keep coming asking the same stupid questions? I've told you. But you see, that's not what God is like. He is sincere. He wants to see us strong. He wants to see us prevail. He wants to give us victory. And all you need to do is ask. But of course, if you know the epistle of James, you know that he then goes on to say, but you must ask with faith and believing and grasping hold on the power and the promise of God. And there is generosity here, because he says it will be given to you. It won't be refused. If we don't use the weapons, because we're not asking for them. Because when we ask, God gives us this spiritual power. There's great power and effectiveness. Power to demolish strongholds. That's strong language. Power to counter arguments and evil intentions. Not a power based on earthly weapons or threats or arguments. Basically, it is the power of the love of God made known through his Son, Jesus Christ. And it is used in a way where we can see that there's a simplicity about it, much more powerful than even the most clever human argument. Now, there was a great 19th century intellectual, a person I greatly admire, but he wasn't a true believer. He was what we call an agnostic. He somehow couldn't discount the possibility of a God or God existing. But he could never really convince himself of it, so he remained an agnostic. T.H. Huxley was his name. And it said in the 19th century, on a weekend like this, he used to go away for a house party. Only the poshest people have them, but if you got invited, you get dressed up and have a whale of a time together. And on the Sunday morning, a group of the people at that particular house party, which Huxley was the most important invitee, he turned to a man in the group who was about to go to church, and he said to that person, excuse me, sir, instead of going to church, you stay here with me and tell me why you believe in Jesus Christ and in Christianity. And it said that the man said, you must be joking, you'll tear me to shreds, you'll destroy anything I would have to say. But T.H. Huxley said, no, I'm not inviting you to come for an argument. I want you to tell me what your Christian faith and walk with Jesus Christ means to you. That's all I want to hear. And so the others went. He stayed with Huxley and he gave his testimony very simply, very straightforwardly. When he'd finished, it said that Huxley, the great agnostic, had immense tears in his eyes. And he said, I'd give my right hand if only I could believe that, he said. The powerful moment. It was the sheer simplicity and the heartfelt sincerity and the selfless example of the man that had got home. Paul, who'd written, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, first for the Jew and then the Gentile. Paul, of whom Luther, centuries later, in the midst of the Protestant Reformation, and wrote these words. The words of Paul are not dead words, he said, but are living creatures that have hands and feet to carry us away. And those words I chose because that would really be my testimony of a young Christian going up to university and college and discovering the Apostle Paul in a new way. And I learned the secret of why he was such a great missionary. I've never been as great a missionary as that, but it's an aim to bear in mind. And we give thanks to God for the power which is available, not just to great figures like Paul, but to you and to me this morning. Amen.